Fantastic day. It is Wednesday, December 6th. It's the first Wednesday of Advent. Can you believe Christmas right around the corner? That's crazy. And the end of the year is soon. Now, this technically isn't, you know, I haven't finished setting it up yet, you know, make official announcement. But I guess I can mention it because I'll probably get all that done today. But I will be doing an end of year fundraising thing, you know, get end of year donations to, you know, start off the year fine when it comes to the financials of the apostolate, you know, because there's lots of stuff to pay for and stuff ain't cheap. So I set up a donation page on my website. I haven't, you know, figured out like an exact amount I want to shoot for, or there's going to be like, you know, there's going to be prizes and stuff. Actually, I'm making this thing legit. I just set up a page on my website, christianbwagner.com/donate, where you can donate there. So anything beginning now, I'll count towards the fundraiser, but just giving you guys a heads up to look for that, because I think I did one last year as well. I think that was a Patreon thing though. I don't think I did like a general donation thing. I kind of want to, you know, maybe I don't know what I'll give out. You guys can let me know what you guys would think would be cool for me to, you know, me to give out. Maybe like books or poster profide.io. I can talk to Eamon, get the winner a poster. I think I'm going to do like a little raffle thing, you know, like every $10 you donate, because, you know, a lot of people do end of year donation things like around Christmas time. So I figured it'd be like a good time to do a little fundraising, you know, nothing wrong with that. Like, maybe I'll get Eamon to donate a poster. Maybe I'll do like private Q&A things for people and their friends to ask whatever questions they want. Do something like that. Maybe tutoring hours or something like that. I don't know. Whatever it is, I'll make it nice. So if you want to jump on that and get the head start, then the donation page is up already. I just kind of need to figure out all of the details. Okay, so yeah, let's organize a phone bank campaign. What is a phone bank campaign? Oh yeah. Hassan. Hey man, it's Dweeb. I guess it's a good time as any to let you know I'm converting to Catholicism. I want to thank you for your work. I'm coming into the church at Easter. You mean Reformed Dweeb? Is that you? We're so back. Let's go. That's amazing, Dweeb. You know that just amazing feeling on stream, finding out that somebody that you used to talk to decided to leave the Reformed and become Catholic because they're epic. I hope it wasn't over your girlfriend though, man. Wait, is that not, are you different? Oh no, that is Hassan. Hassan said money. Okay, so what was I going to do? What is this whole show about? You know, I wasted the first 5 minutes of your guys's life, 25 of you. I lured you in with the promise of a Jay Dyer refutation, and then now I'm just, you know, talking about whatever I want to. Apologies for that. You know, I wish I could give you back your 5 minutes, but, you know, it's too late. It's too late. I'd have to, like, shut down the stream and then restart it. And then the 25 of you watching right now would be quite upset at me if I did that. I probably won't be interacting with the chat too much. I will. Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Hassan. Now I remember. Okay. I won't be interacting with the chat that much. If there's a super chat, I'll answer it. Unless it's, you know, unless it's like a really dumb super. I wish I've never had like extremely dumb super chats, like maybe once or twice. But I wish you could just like reject a super chat, because then I feel bad about it, because, you know, I instantly have to accept the money and then it's a dumb question. So I either have to answer a dumb question or waste everybody's time like I am right now by talking about this, or you just have to accept the person's money and just, well, you know, that's a penalty for asking a dumb question. You don't get your question answered and you get your you don't get your money. I don't know. I wish I feel bad about that, though. I wish I could just like return it. Anyways. So, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of his name right now. Aristides, is I'm assuming Aristides. I've never heard anybody say his name out loud. He was an early second century church father. So this is going way back. This is actually one of the earliest apologists. Some church historians think that St. Justin Martyr was actually drawing from Aristides. I'm just going to say his from now on, because it's just complicating him. We're drawing from his works. So he was writing actually around something 125 AD. So this is going way back. This is like early second century, you know, 25 years ago. St. John the Apostle was probably still alive or had just died. So this is way early church. This is one of the first apologetic works in defense of Catholicism that we have. So I kind of titled this a bit of an inflammatory title, that this refutes Jay Dyer. But really, Hassan is right. This is about Eastern Orthodox fideism, which basically what this is talking about is a rejection of the classical method of doing apologetics. Now, what does that mean? So classically, when you look at something like Summa Contra Gentiles, you look at something like Summa Contra Gentiles, because that Thomas Aquinas is kind of their, you know, they'll point to Thomas Aquinas as their arch nemesis when it comes to this. What St. Thomas does is he wants to show two things. First, he wants to show that the faith, while it cannot be proven by reason, and you can get this from reading the first like 10 chapters of book one of Summa Contra Gentiles, he wants to show that there's some sort of concord between what is revealed by faith and what we can know by reason. Not only is there concord in that they don't contradict one another, there's also a high degree of fittingness. So it goes, basically we can describe this as like it goes beyond our wildest expectations and it fulfills natural desires that we have in a super eminent manner. I won't get into the natural desire to see God debate. That's kind of a whole nother question, you know. But we have these natural desires, obviously not natural desires for supernatural things, natural desires for natural things that get far surpassed beyond our wildest imagination by Christianity. So that's what St. Thomas wants to show on the one hand. On the other hand, what he wants to show is he wants to show that all of the false religions somehow are going to be interiorly contradictory. They're going to have some sort of, you know, good remnant. This is something that the second century and early third century apologists are really, really good at showing. Tertullian does this all the time. He basically shows they have some sort of goodness. We can describe some sort of goodness, which is left in their false religion. So it's not completely corrupted in that it's the worst that it possibly could be. But the rest of their religion is inconsistent with this goodness that's present in it. So what the apology that we're going to be reading from Aristides, he has a very interesting methodology that almost actually directly contradicts the way in which Dyer thinks about apologetics, because what he's going to say is him and all the neo-Eastern Orthodox fideists, what they're going to say is they're going to say Thomas Aquinas, in trying to posit some sort of natural knowledge of God, which can be known from the light of nature, he was wrong. We can't do this. We can't do this. Rather, we need to look at the coherence of one's worldview. We can't have this sort of common ground of natural knowledge. They would say that's impossible. But when you read this Apology of Aristides, he's assuming very clearly from the outset and then throughout the work, he's assuming that we have this natural knowledge of God. And then from this natural knowledge, both natural knowledge of God and then also natural knowledge of the moral law, from this natural knowledge that we have, he appeals to the king, and he says, look, all of the religions, he's gonna point to three religions. He's going to say there's four races of men, the barbarians, the Greeks, the Egyptians, and the Christians. And he's going to say that the Christians, in what they teach, it is not at all contradictory, and is in complete concord with what we can know by nature. That's what he's going to say about the Christians. But on the other hand, what he's going to say about the barbarians, the Greeks, and the Jews, barbarians, Greeks, Jews, he's going to say that these three, they're going to contradict something that we naturally know. So therefore, they have to be wrong. And this is basically the methodology that we're going to see in the medieval Latin apologists. And then also the Eastern ones as well, but we're not going to get into that. There's some interesting stuff on that I could possibly cover in a different time. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to just read the relevant sections and kind of just show how this is utterly out of line with Jay's critique of natural theology. And it's completely in line with how the medieval Latins are going to go about apologetics. Okay, so what's important first is to read this introductory section, because this is where he lays out the first premise that he's going to show that all of the others are going to contradict. And this first premise is that God exists and he has certain attributes that we can deduce. And then from God's existence and these certain attributes that we can deduce, we can see that the other religions, since they contradict those attributes, are therefore false, and they don't worship the true God. So he says, I, O king, by the grace of God, came into this world. And when I had considered the heaven and the earth and the seas, and had surveyed the sun and the rest of creation, I marveled at the beauty of the world. And I perceived that the world and all that therein are moved by the power of another. And I understood he who moves them is God, who is hidden in them and veiled by them. And it is manifest that which causes motion is more powerful than that which is moved. But that I should make search concerning this same mover of all, as to what is his nature, for it seems to me he is indeed unsearchable in his nature, which St. Thomas says the same thing, by the way, and that I should argue as to the constancy of his government, so as to grasp it fully, that is a vain effort for me, for it is not possible that a man should fully comprehend it. I say, however, concerning this mover of the world, that he is God of all, who made all things for the sake of mankind. And it seems to me that it is reasonable that one should fear God and should not oppress man. I say then that God is not born, not made, an ever-abiding nature, without beginning, without end, immortal, perfect, and incomprehensible. Now, when I say that he is perfect, this means that there is not in him any defect, and he is not in need of anything, but all things are in need of him. And when I say that he is without beginning, this means that everything which has a beginning also has an end, and that which has an end may be brought to an end. He has no name, for everything which has a name is kindred to things created. Form he has none, nor any union of members. This is talking about not having any parts or body. For whatsoever possesses these is kindred to things fashioned. He is neither male nor female. The heavens do not limit him, but the heavens and all things, visible and invisible, receive their bounds from him. Adversary he has none, for there exists not any stronger than he. Wrath and indignation he possesses not. So notice this is impassibility. Wrath and indignation he possesses not, for there is nothing which is able to stand against him. Ignorance and forgetfulness are not in his nature, for he is altogether wisdom and understanding. And in him stands fast all that exists. He requires not sacrifice and libation, nor even one of things visible. He requires not anything from any, but all living creatures stand in need of him. Since then, we have addressed you concerning God, so far as our discourse can bear upon him. Let us now come to the race of man, that we may know which of them participate in the truth of which we have spoken, and which of them go astray from it. So notice, who is he writing to? He's writing, as a clear right here, king. He's writing to the king. This is to Caesar, Titus, Hadrianus, Antoninus. So he's writing to the king, and the king is a pagan who is philosophically inclined. So what is going on here is that he's laying out a sort of fundamental understanding of the nature of God. He starts out with the existence, then he goes to the nature of God that we can have from the fact that he is creator. Because what he starts out with is that creation has to be moved by power of another. He goes in, and then he says, it is manifest to me that what causes motion is more powerful than that which is moved. So he starts out by proving from motion and then saying he must have more power than creation. And then he goes in and basically lists all of those things in which God has to be more powerful than. Because ignorance and forgetfulness would say that he has less power. If he has an adversary, he would have less power. If something stood against him, he would have wrath and indignation, but nothing stands against him. Therefore, he doesn't have these passions and so on. So this is the argument that he brings up at first. And then what he does is he says, okay, we have this knowledge of God because we know that he moves all things. We know that that which moves is greater than that which is moved. And from these things, let's look at all of the religions. And then he kind of brings them down to four religions. And he says that three of these religions contradict it. But the fourth one, that is the Christianity is in line with natural theology. So he's going to list, this is clear to you, O king, that there are four classes of men in the world, barbarians and Greeks, Jews and Christians. So these are the four. And barbarians basically mean non-Greeks. This would be like, for example, the Egyptians. The Egyptians would be barbarians. So he goes in and he is going to give kind of brief summaries of each one of the religions, Judaism, Christianity, barbarism, and then what is the Greek religion. And he is going to start out with the barbarians. And the barbarians, he's going to say that basically barbarians, they hold error about what God is. He says, let us begin with the barbarians and go into the rest of the nations one after another, that we may see which of them hold the truth as to God and which of them hold error. And something that's important right here, let me see. The barbarians did not observe that that which acts as guard is greater than that which is guarded. So he's going off that principle of the fact that the creator must be greater than the creature. So what he's saying here is that for the religion of the barbarians, we have to, that they have to guard their images and their idols and so on. And therefore they are greater than their idols. And this is something that actually is from the prophets. But since they have to guard their idols, they must be greater than their idols. Now, God is not something which is less than a creature. You're a creature, therefore, that's not God. And that's just the general argument that he's going to use. He's going to go on to prove that it can't be any of the elements. Let us turn now, O king, to the elements in themselves, that we may make clear in regard to them that they are not gods, but a created thing, liable to ruin and change. So there's some sort of mutability, which is of the same nature as man, whereas God is imperishable and unvarying and invisible, while yet he sees and overrules and transforms all things. So he's going to say, okay, here's another attribute that you guys are going to attribute to the elements. That is, and you say that somehow God is one of the elements. Some of you do. And you, therefore, you guys have some sort of contradiction with what we know from nature. And notice all in here, he's just assuming that the king is able to, as a pagan, know these various things. So we go down to 7. And 7 is basically going to say the same thing about the nature of man, the nature of man as well. For those who are going to have apotheosis, which is apotheosis is the making of men into gods. Kind of like how there's emperor worship amongst the Romans. That's basically what it is. So he's disproving apotheosis now amongst the barbarians. So he says, and those who believed of the men of the past that some of them were gods, they too were much mistaken. For as you yourself allow, O king, man is constituted of the four elements and of a soul and a spirit, and hence he is called a microcosm. And without any one of these parts, he cannot consist. He has a beginning and an end, and he is born and dies. But God, as I said, has none of these things in his nature, but is uncreated and imperishable. And hence it is not possible that we should set up man to be of the nature of God, man to whom at times when he looks for joy, there comes trouble. And when he looks for laughter, there comes to him weeping, who is wrathful and covetous and envious and other defects as well. And he is destroyed in many ways by the elements and also by the animals. And hence, O king, we are bound to recognize the error of the barbarians, and thereby, since they did not find traces of the true God, they fell aside from the truth and went after the desire of their imaginations, serving the perishable elements and lifeless images, through their error not apprehending what the true God is. So notice what's interesting is that there are traces of the true God which are out there to find, which he is going to assume that while the barbarians don't have, because the barbarians... Barbarians are just worshiping the elements. They're worshiping man. They're worshiping a bunch of different degenerate things, which we're going to see the Greeks are even worse, that some do apprehend traces of the true God, as we'll see with what he says about the Jews, especially. So going on down to, let's see, down to 12, when he begins to discuss the Egyptians. There's a funny quote here. I'm not going to be able to. Oh yeah, yeah. Look, this is just straight up rude, man. The Egyptians, moreover, because they are more base and stupid than every other people that is on the earth, have themselves erred more than all. Oh man, that's just funny. Okay, so. And then he continues with another god, and Osiris also, they say that he is a serviceable god, and he was killed by Typhon and was unable to help himself. But it is well known, so notice right here, this is important, but it is well known amongst who? That's a good question. I mean, is there natural knowledge of the deity? I mean, well known amongst the Christians? That's a weird sense to give it. No, well known amongst mankind. It's well known amongst all people. We have this natural knowledge that we're kind of working off of. So he's refuting Osiris of some sort of well-known fact about God. But it is well known that this cannot be asserted of divinity. And further, they say of his brother Typhon that he is a god who killed his brother and was killed by his brother's son and by his bride, being unable to help himself. If you read this whole letter, all of these pagan myths are just insane. absolutely insane. So going back down to 14 to where he begins to discuss Judaism, which is the third of the races, barbarians, Greeks, now Jews. Let us come now, O king, to the history of the Jews also and see what opinion they have as to God. The Jews then say that God is one, the creator of all and omnipotent, and that is not right that any other should be worshipped except this God alone. And herein they appear to approach the truth much more than all the nations, especially in that they worship God and not his works. Interesting comment right there. And they imitate God by the philanthropy which prevails amongst them. For they have compassion to the poor, and they release the captives and bury the dead and do such things as these, which is acceptable before God and is well-pleasing also to men, which customs they have received from their forefathers. Nevertheless, they too erred from true knowledge. And in their imagination, they conceive that it is God they serve, whereas by their mode of observance, it is to the angels and not to God that their service is rendered. As when they celebrate Sabbaths in the beginning of the months and feasts of unleavened bread and a great fast and fasting and circumcision and the purification of meats, which things, however, they do not observe perfectly. And then finally, after we have the defective knowledge of the barbarians, the defective knowledge of the Greeks, the defective knowledge of the Jews, now we have the perfect knowledge of the Christians. And what is important right here, is very important right here, is that there's kind of like a twofold motion that you have here. So you have, yeah, the speculatively, they do not assert anything about God right up to here. That is against, you know, reason, that is out of line with reason. What's much more important about the Christians for him is that you have all this section where they talk about the fact that they obey the commandments. That, like right here, their women, O king, are pure as virgins, and their daughters are modest. And their men keep themselves from every unlawful union and from all uncleanness. So the obedience to both the moral laws as a moral miracle, and also the correct knowledge of God, are both going to be able to show which is a true religion versus which is not a true religion. So we look at other religions as well as part of natural theology. We can look at the what is known from natural law and see if another religion contradicts a primary precept of the natural law. And yeah, we know they're false as well. Let me see if there is there's anything here. Let me see. Check in. I know I wasted the first 5 minutes, but hey, I went on for 20 minutes, so I guess this counts. Okay. I said I wasn't going to answer questions unless they're super chats, but it's only been 27 minutes, so I kind of feel bad right now. What are you guys arguing about in the comments? Boom, boom, boom. Let me see. Yeah, okay, so St. Bonaventure actually argues in Mind's Word to God that there are signs of the Trinity present in nature, like the threefold operation of the intellect. Yes, so this is in the important place to go here. St. Augustine talks about this, the so-called traces of the Trinity in creation. And then Lombard takes this up in his sentences, I'm trying to remember exactly vestiges. Okay, let's see. So this is in distinction three. St. Thomas treats it in his second question, his commentary on the sentences. But in distinction three, that's the classical locus of discussion of the vestige of the Trinity. And how to distinguish a vestige from an image. If you want the treatment in the Summa, he talks about this in the Summa as well. Let me see. Oh, man, I'm not going to be able to find it, am I? This is going to be really annoying. Okay. Dang, it's game over. Oh, is the image versus vestige? That's talked about in the second part of Breeding Pars. Let me see. Well, not the second part of Prima Pars, the second volume of Prima Pars. When he talks about the image of God and man, let's see. Let's go. We are absolutely so back. It's going to be in question 93 in the Summa. Well, I don't know why I didn't think it was in the, why I thought it was in the part on De Deo Trino. No, it's on the part on man. So question 93 of Prima Pars. So yes, there's a distinction between a vestige and or footprint and an image. Which an image is going to reveal something about the nature of the thing. It's going to have some sort of similitude with it. Whereas a vestige is not necessarily going to have a similitude, but it's going to have some sort of like a trace of an effect somewhere. Okay, there you go. Okay. Does this stream act as some sort of philosophical call out to Dyer? Okay, so I think, and I meant to mention this at the beginning, I think what's important to realize with Dyer, especially on this issue, is Dyer, and this has been pointed out by others, in no meaningful sense represents a sort of strict expositor of Orthodox theology. Rather, Dyer, and of course, this isn't to say that, you know, he's stupid or anything like that, but Dyer really represents personal synthesis. It's just the truth. He's studied various different authors from various different backgrounds. And from this, he has come to this personal synthesis that he labels as Orthodox theology, but it's really just kind of his thing. And the issue with this is if you were to ask Jay, like, hey, can you show me from the church fathers, from their apologetic methodology, that they actually agree with your presuppositionalism? Yeah, they're going to point to like Irenaeus or something like that. The support for that is pretty weak. Or he'll even try to point to John of Damascus, which is weird because John of Damascus uses arguments for the existence of God. But really, he can't even point to his own tradition, his own Orthodox tradition, post-schism, to prove this. This is something that Dyer himself appropriated from somebody else. Which again, not to say that's wrong necessarily from this case, but if we're going to take the sort of view of authority that Catholic and Orthodox take when it comes to the Church Fathers and when it comes to our own theological traditions, then for him it's going to be something which is incoherent. It's going to be wrong because of this. So when you have Church Fathers who are pulling a methodology that is diametrically opposed to him and to the way what he says about natural theology, it's clearly no bueno. And if you want a history, Matthew Levering has a good book on the proof for the existence of God. And what's cool is that he starts with Tertullian, and it's like a historical survey of the various arguments which have been put forward by Christians. So plenty are going to be from the patristic era. This isn't going to be something which just kind of pops up in medieval papism and the based Eastern Orthodox are actually the ones who didn't fall into this. Silly. And then I have like a complete collection of where Latin authors talk about this, but I know exactly what I'll be hit with. So I haven't took the time to put together an anthology of them. Oh yeah, Dyer trying to use Damascene when St. John literally uses natural theology straight out of Aristotle to prove God. Yeah, I feel like what a lot of them forget is Aristotle has his proofs at the end of Physics and Metaphysics of the existence of God. But the Greek fathers at the time were like still utilizing the peripatetic commentatorial tradition on Aristotle's works, including what Aristotle says about the arguments for the existence of God. So what St. Thomas does is, you know, exactly what the Eastern theologians were doing with the works of Aristotle. So really not understanding why he freaks out about that. Are you planning on debating Dyer on this point? No. Why would I debate Dyer? Okay, let me see if there's anything I want to answer. Okay. Is this a Q&A now or what? No, I guess not. I guess I have to go soon. I have a lot of stuff to do. You know what I do? I have this sticky note right here. What I do is I have a master sheet right here of stuff that I do on a cycle weekly and daily in order to keep me read and stuff that I need to keep read, keep me working on stuff I need to keep working and all that stuff. And like, you know, school stuff and crap like that. So I keep myself, you know, on a daily schedule, and it's already noon. It's lunchtime. And I've only done three things. Which I don't know why it's taken me. I'm usually done like five or six things by now. So I don't know what's taken me so incredibly long today to finish everything up that I need to. Yeah, I'm going to ban you. Yeah. Okay. Well, I am going to leave now. But I hope you all had a fantastic day. Hope that was helpful. And as always, God bless.